Rav Shlomo should open our eyes to understand his Torah. And here we are in a particularly mysterious part of Chumash. Last week, Parshas Truma was the Mishkan and the Kalim of the Mishkan. And this week, in Parshas Tetzava, the main focus, not the only, but the main focus on the Big Day Kahuna. So we have some handle on the Big Day Kahuna. There were four begadim that the Kohen had to wear. And they were all, or almost all, pure white linen. Interesting machlokas, whether the avnik of the Kohen Hedyot was also just pure white linen, or whether it was a blend of Tcheles Agam and Tola Hashani as well as linen. That's incredibly lamaisa bezman hazeh, yeah? By the way. Why is that incredible? Why is that machlokas incredibly lamaisa bezman hazeh? Because in the early Timid 1800s, there was a Talmud Chacham by the name of Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, a Talmud of very, very famous Gedolei Achronim. Talmud of, I believe, both Kiva Eger and Chassam Sofer, the father-in-law and son-in-law. And Sirius Kalischer had this idea that we should restart Akravas HaKarbanos even before the Beis HaMikdash is built. His idea was that we should buy our abayas back from the Turks, who at the time controlled Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael, and hundreds of miles all around, by the Ottoman Empire. We'll buy our buys back from the Turks, and then we'll resume, even before, without building the Beis HaMikdash, Mishnah Neidios, Makrivin Afafishay Bais, let's start bringing carbonos. So he lined up, there were like 5 or 10 different halachic impediments to doing that, and he wrote a tshuva, which is really a sefer, Drishas Tzion, I believe it's called, in which he lays out his solution to every single problem. How are we going to figure out where the Makom Mizbeach is? Here's the answer. How are we going to figure out who are Kohanim? Here's the answer. What are we going to do about Tumah? We don't have a Parah Aduma. The answer is, well, Tumah Hutra B'tzibur. Carbon of Tzibur you can bring, if Rova Tzibur is Tumah, Tumah's nice, so then you can bring it even with Tumah. I have a carbon of Tzibur, how do you bring carbon of Tzibur? They bring a carbon Tzibur, a carbon Tumah, a carbon Musaf. Tzibur means that it's funded by public money. Public money means you have to have Shkolim. That, by the way, is Yana Dioma. The month of Adar, first Mishnah Shkolim says the month of Adar is the month of collecting Shkolim. The fiscal year in the Mikdash begins with Rosh Chodesh Nisan. They'll be collecting, of course, this month, and then the Karbanos beginning with Rosh Chodesh Nisan are paid with the new incoming Shkolim. How are we going to, it's not practical, because Jews are all over the Gola. How are we going to organize I can organize a collection of Machzah Shekel. So he has a fantastic solution. His solution is one carbon, at least, which is not funded by public money. So from a funding perspective, it's a carbon yachid. But from a tumah perspective, it has the status of a carbon tzibur, because it's kavul ozman. And that carbon is a carbon pesach. He says, that's the solution. Carbon pesach is baba tumah, but it's not funded by Machzah Shekel. Any one person or certainly a group of people, chavur, get together and they buy a sheep or goat, and you're in business. So he felt that he had solved all the issues, and his rabbeim were masking to much of what he said. Ultimately, due to a collection of both halachic and practical impediments, it didn't happen. The practical impediment was that, you know, Harbais was not actually for sale. The Turks were not really open to negotiating. But that was his concept. There were some halachic impediments also. There were certain, Rav Shech likes to point out, there were certain piskei halacha or assumptions about what the consensus psak that seems to have changed as a result of what he said. Certainly the status of Kohanim bizman hazeh. Early Achronim, if you look in Hilchot Pirkei Aben, Simon Shenhe, I believe in Yodea, the Pirkei Tshuva is a long list of early Achronim who say that we should really treat Kohan as man as Kohan is suffering. And the later Achron, a few years college and on, the Chassam Sofer and Kiva Eger seem to have firmly accepted the Tzir Shkalash's argument on that point, that Kohan is man as are basically violent Kohan, and sometimes they have a chumrah to treat them as not quite the same unless they can actually prove their yichus, but the Min HaTorah, it's not an issue. And for all intents and purposes, we should treat Kohanim as Vadai Kohanim, which is certainly borne out by the fact that Kohanim make a bracha before the Duchen, make a bracha on Pidyon HaBen, if it was a Safik, so maybe you could Duchen be Safik, so So you could do pina deni safek, you wouldn't make a bracha. So that, in terms of that, he seems to have been accepted. But one of the other issues that he raises, and that's why I say this halacha maisa, is this machlokes. It's machlokes we've shown in the halacha. What do the big day kohen head look like? The kohen is going to have mishnah in the second paragraph of and says he need a kohen for avodah and he needs to be wearing big day kahuna. His man shein big day malayim in kunasa malayim. If he's not wearing his big day kahuna, he's not fully a kohen, at least for based on mikdash purposes. The kohen brings karbanos without big day kahuna. It's ki'ilu a non kohen brought the karbanos. So this is absolutely critical. It's crucial. You have to have big day kahuna. Okay, so we have linen. We'll make big day kahuna. Ah. The question is, how about the avnet? Chelas are gavon tola ashadi. Issue number one is, can we even identify what they are? And I believe that was part of the beginning of the modern quest to identify the chelas. Number two is, one second. Chelas are gavon tola ashadi and sheish, those first three are all wool, not just a particular color, not just dyed with a particular type of dye, but it's wool. Chelas is specifically wool dyed with he wasn't that. Yeah. Sure. Anyway, there you go. So this is shanis. This is shanis. If the avnet is made of three types of wool and one type of linen, that's shanis. How does the coin wear it? The answer is okay. So the mitzvah of big day kahuna is don't have the answer of shanis if there's a mitzvah of big day kahuna. So this machlokes, whether the avnet of the coin head yod is meant to be pure linen or all four colors, so there's no way to be machmir here. You gotta bite the bullet, you gotta decide. Number one, you can't even wear two different avnetim, you cover your bases, one all white and one multicolored, because that's probably an issue of miyutar begadim. Just like the coin cannot be missing begadim, you can't be mechusar begadim, you also cannot be miyutar begadim. You can't wear anything other than big dick una. That's problem number one. Problem number two is to put on that avnet with the wool and the linen, if you're not sure, machlokes, I believe Rambam Raivin, Hadapaskin, whether it's supposed to be, whether only the Kohen Gadol wears the multicolored avnet and the Kohen Hegut wears all white, or even the Kohen Hegut wears multicolored, that's Safek Shanas. If you're going to wear that with, it's a Safek Shanas. So you really have to make it, this is one of the major issues. I said he had a whole slew of 5-10 different halakhic impediments to restoring our carbons, our carbonos, as long as that. It does have an interesting type of halacha lamaisa aspect. Another halacha lamaisa aspect, and then we're going to dive into Ramban, which is not at all halacha lamaisa. Meher Yibana Mikdash, but not at the moment. Something to think about is that line I mentioned before, the Gemara Zvachim has, Bizman she'in bigdeim aleim ein kuhunasam aleim. The Kohen is not wearing, based on the Sukkot of the Sixth Parash, Kohen is not wearing big kuhuna, he's not fully a Kohen. L'kad d'sho l'cha no li. They wear the begadim to mekadosh them, to make them kohanim. And that ignited quite a discussion among the early Bali Atosis. What does that mean about kohanim as long as that? Ben and Tom had a line that maybe some of the dinim don't apply to kohanim. Yeah, you're allowed to have a kohen be mishamesh and non-kohen because there's mancha in big demalim in kohanim. That ignited a whole discussion. Mordechai has, the Rav suggested, a lot to say about that, but Pekitzer, the Rav suggested maybe what it means is, of course, a Kohen is a Kohen. A Kohen Bizman Hazeh or Bizman HaMikdash, without Big Tikhuna, can still duchen, clearly. A Kohen is not allowed to marry a Grusha, Chalala, or Zona merely because he's not wearing Big Tikhuna. Clearly, Kohanim have Kedusha's Kahuna at all times. But maybe there's an added layer of Kedusha's Kahuna Sheva Mikdash that only is in place when he's wearing the Big Tikhuna. Kohen is a Kohen. He has a certain basic degree of universal Kedusha Kuna at all times, but if he gets an added degree of Kedusha Kuna, Kedusha Kuna Shem Mikdash, and he wears the Big Day Kuna, so for certain particular dinim, such as Hakarbas Hakarbanas, you need that higher level, which is only accessible when you wear the Big Day Kuna. But for the other dinim, Abduchanim, and the Kidashto, and the Isuri Kuhuna, those who a Kohen cannot marry, the Isra of a Kohen to become Tamil Meis, the qualification of a Kohen to be Rohan Adayim, all those other dinim merely require Kedusha's Kuna Sheh Begulin, the worldwide Kedusha's Kuna, which the Kohen always has inherently, even without Big Deguna. So those are two sort of halacha lamasa v'zman hazeh aspects of Big Deguna. But now I want to jump with you, with the Ramban, into one of the most abstruse and mysterious parts of the Big Day Kuvah. Because I told you before, and you would have told me also, I would ask you, how many big adam does the coin head you'll wear? You would have told me how many. Four. Right? What are they? The Chesayim, Ksonas, Mikvas on his head, the Afrit. And Kohen Gadol has how many? Eight. Right? Those four is a different type of hat, it's nefes, and four added ones. What are the four added ones? Koshen, Mi'il, Eifod, and the six. Devam. You sure that's it? You sure? Pretty sure. Right? I mean, that's true. Eight begun. There's something else, though, that's sort of lingering in the Pesukim. It never really gets clearly defined. The mysterious Urim Betumim. The Urim Betumim. Here you see, Parak Chavches, Pasuk Lamed. Vinasata. Ah, very good. Vinasata Choshen HaMishpat Es HaUrim Es HaTumim. You're going to put into the Choshen Mishpat the Urim and the Tumim, which, by the way, is exactly why, as that points out, Gerson Eibishitz, one of the Gedolei Achronim, wrote a Sefer on Choshen Mishpat called Urim Betumim. And by the way, he also wrote a Sefer on Yehudeya, which was named Crazy Uplacy, which is a name that appears later in the Tanakh, that's assumed to be another term for the Urim Betumim. But there you go. You put, add the Urim Betumim to the Choshen Mishpat. Yes, Eibishitz was a brilliant Talmud Chacham, and also had a fantastic and wry sense of humor, as you know from many stories of Yosef Eibishitz. You should know, B'chalal, as you learn Parshas Tetzaveh, there's so many terms ultimately become names of Svar. Number one, the Arba Turim, the Tur, official name is Arba Turim, one of which is Choshen Mishpat, which the Shulchan Aruch picks up on. And you have the...
I feel like a returner once asked us, how many Svarim can you find in Parshas Tetzaveh?
There you go. The Mishpas of Zahav, a tremendous amount. Mishpas of Zahav is the Prima Gadim super commentary on the Taz, the Turei Zahav. The Turei Zahav is a pun, a cross between Arba Turim, in this week's Parsha, and Torei Zahav in Shir HaShir, which is with a top. Torei Zahav Naselach. The Shach wrote his sefer on much of Shulchan Aruch, Kisifsei Kohen Yishmer Das. His name was Shabsi Kohen, Harav Shabsi Kohen. So Sifsei and Shabsi almost the same. Sifsei Kohen Yishmer Das, particularly for Yardea, but ends up being the title for everything. And then he also wrote responses, Hasagos, on the Taz. So the Taz wrote the Turei Zav, which is a takeoff of the Torei Zav. So Pasuk goes on to say, Torei Zav Naselach in Nikudos Hakasa. So the Shach's Hasagas and the Taz are called the Nikudas HaKesa. And then the Prima Gadim, he keeps spinning, he's writing Perushim on the super commentary, Perushim on the side, and those Perushim on the side of Shulchan Aruch. So his names are always a takeoff. On the Magen Avraham, he writes the Eshel Avraham. On the Sifsei Kohen, he writes the Sifsei Das, which is again that Pasuk sort of woven together. On the Taz, he writes the Mishpat Zahav. Torah Zav, Mishpat Zav, that takes us back to Parshas Tetzav. And here we are back with the Urim, the Tumim, and the Crazy Places. But these are all incredibly clever names. The Ksos HaChoshen, the Sivus HaMishpat, right? Both are taking off on the Choshen and the Mishpat. Very, very good. Very, very good. By Daniel Feldman told me decades ago, he was given advice by Dr. Lamb in writing, presenting a Sefer. So the place for humor is in the titles. You write a serious sefer, but the titles could be clever. The titles and the chapter titles. So now that I think about it, could be that's an old minute. There are no jokes within the ktos. There are no jokes within the taz or the shach or the urim betumim. But the titles are very subtly, incredibly clever. So maybe that's the old minute. But here we are, let's go back to what the pasuk is actually directly addressing. So, Yerush Naibushis is, if we want to, we could say tongue in cheek, Alderach Remez. But let's talk about the pshat, and the Rambans are also going to cut the other way. This is going to be pshat and solo at the same time. Sava Rabbi Avraham Lehishakim, the Indian Harim Batum. Ramban is very direct. In this opening line, you know, the Rabbi says, Rabbi Avraham, that's a reference to the Ibn Ezra, he thought he would be very smart in the topic of Urim V'Tumim. The sarcasm is intended by the Ramban. Ramban writes in the poem, I believe, with which he opens his Pirush on the Torah, he writes that he's going to be talking about Rashi extensively, with great respect. He'll disagree with him sometimes, but with great respect. And Rashi really may be sort of the center point, the core from which Ramban travels. And then he says, with Rabbi Avraham, we'll have, I believe the language is Tochachas Magula Va'Ava Mesuteres. Ava Mesuteres is Ava Magula. I believe that's a reference to Pasuk in Mishlei. It says, I'll have very open revealed Tochacha, and it's hidden love. And deep down, and that's what he's saying is, I really love and respect Ibn Ezra very much. You're not always going to be able to tell because I'm going to come out, guns blazing, attacking Ibn Ezra, and I think that he's incorrect. So Chachas Magula Avam Mesuteres. So here is a golden example. The first thing that Rabban says is, Ibn Ezra thought he was so smart in the way that he analyzed Urim V'Tumim. What did he say? The Omar. Gehi Maisa Uman, Kesav Azav. That it must be some sort of delicate smith work, something made by a goldsmith or by a silversmith, some delicate jewelry, precious metals. The Herich Be'inyanam. And he says, Ibn Ezra spends a lot of time writing about what he believes the Urim V'Tumim to be. Ki Chashav, Sheheim Alatzurot Sheyasu Ba'al Kochavim Lotas Mechsheves Hashor. Because he thought that these are meant to be patterned after, or they're similar to, anyhow, they're similar to what the astrologers use to try to figure out, answer a questioner's question. Someone comes to an astrologer and wants to know about the future, wants to know about his luck, whatever it is. So they have their tarot cards and various other things. They'll have sometimes metal or gold or silver tools that they use in their hocus pocus to pretend to predict the future. The lo amar klum. That's Rabban's response. So he didn't say anything. He had a lot to say, and Rabban thinks that's all utter balderdash. All utter narishkeit, Rabban thinks. Wow. We would not say that Ibn Ezra, but Rabban was definitely in a position to make such a statement. So, a question?
Ibn Ezra believed in astrology.
Yeah, so that's probably part of the undertone here. Is that the Ramban doesn't, at least at this point, explain why he's out of hand rejecting Ibn Ezra, but from what the few things that he does say, you get the impression that we'll see as we proceed that there's plenty more, but at least initially the impression you get is astrology. Because Baruch Hu wants you to build things that are similar to what the astrologer's tools. No. He had Ibn Ezra had plenty to say, and he didn't say a word. So says Ramban. He said nothing of substance. What halakha are the Urim V'Tumim? Avalim k'divrei Rashi. Rather, I would, says the Ramban, I would embrace the approach of Rashi. K'sav shal shem ha-meforash nosun ben kifle ha-choshen. The Shem Hashem, the explicit name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was written, presumably a piece of parchment, and then placed between the folds of the choshen. Rashi explains, based on the Pesukim, that the choshen was a piece of cloth that was a 2x1 ratio. So it sounds like that when you fold it over, you had a square. Rabban says, that's why the potion is meant to be folded over. That way you have a pocket. It forms a pocket that holds this ksav shel shem mefurash, the haraya. And then Rabban says, it's not just some notion of astrology he's repelled by. No. He said, look at the Pesukim themselves. Every other should know just by learning Parshas Tetzav with open eyes. Harayki lo nizkur urim v'tumim kal b'maisa u'manim. When the Torah describes the work, particularly Pekudei, you get to Viyakut Pekudei, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the Jews what they need to do, and they collect the raw materials, and then they get to work. And they make this, and they make that, and make this, and there's a lot of chazara there. Does it say anything about them making the urim v'tumim? No. That's one item that's not chazar. Does not say that they made, that they were craftsmen making the Urim V'Tumim. Neither is it mentioned in Vayakel when Moshe conveys to the Jewish people, here's what you need to make, nor is it mentioned subsequently when the Chumash describes them actually doing the work. Uparat v'gadim, Don't think that, oh, it just says Ur, big day kahuna. No, there are specifics there. It enumerates, itemizes the big day kahuna. Vayasas ha'efa, vayasas ha'choshen, yet below amar vayas Ur batum. That's strange. If this is some sort of exquisite, you know, highly professional craft work, the way Ibn Ezra is describing, we should spend even more time on this. This is such an extraordinary level of professionalism. And they feel coming, oh, but this is such a deep Kabbalah that we're not going to say too much. Okay. He says, if the Torah didn't want to give the details, it could have said, no, Roshel doesn't want to reveal the Kabbalistic secrets, so Shem said, okay, make it as I showed you. And by the way, where did he get that idea from? This is, I believe, Ramban Shitaso. Because Ramban, I believe, understands back in Parshas Truma, I think that might have been one of the Rabbans I mentioned last week, if you want to take a peek, what he says about the menorah. He said that the idea of Niskasha and Moshe, the Maisa and menorah, that Moshe didn't have the Rashi quotes from the Midrash and Chazal, Moshe didn't have a very hard time figuring it out. With Rabban writes that what that means is that there's a lot of Kabbalistic layers to making the menorah, and that was part of the challenge. It wasn't just a practical challenge of physically, how do you, it's a craftsman's challenge. How does a goldsmith, create such fine work without cutting and welding? No, it was more than that. But that's what the Torah says, the way I showed you, by the very similar language, by the menorah. Then Rabban said, with Shittasa. That's what the Chumash said by the menorah. You make it as I showed you. I enchant all those details. You can say here also. Whatever was made of, even other things is gold or silver. And then he says, well, how many kash does he have, number one? That does he have so far? Number one, the Torah never mentions it in the Moshe Rabbeinu's instructions to the Jews. Torah never mentions in Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Jews actually making it. You'll tell me. It was very profound. You could have at least said it b'kitzur. And then he said, there's something else. If you're sensitive to the psukim, but oh, tashuv tireh. Here we are at footnote 83, five lines from the bottom of page, top ayin. Oh, tashuv tireh. Kilo his kireh ayidia echad mikol hakeim shal miskufa. He says, let's actually learn the psukim carefully. When in the past, when the Torah mentioned various kalim, the first time they mentioned va'asu aram. What does not appear at the beginning of the name of each item? What letter does not appear? Hey, does it say Vasu es ha'aron, Vasisa es ha'shulchan, Vasisa es ha'menorah? No, it says what make an aron, make a shulchan, make a menorah. Why? Because we haven't told you about it yet. I mean, the aron, which aron? Once I mention it once, then already I'll say the. For instance, in this pasuk, going back to Gibran Rasmul, V'nasata el choshen ha-mishpat es ha-orim ves ha-tumim. The fact that it's referred to now as the choshen mishpat, then you have two words combined like that in Hebrew, the he goes to the second word, choshen ha-mishpat, the choshen mishpat, yeah, it's because we mentioned it in previous psukim. I already told you, make a choshen mishpat and put into the choshen mishpat orim v'tumim. Except the Torah didn't say that. It said, Ho'orim, Bahatumim. This is the only item, says Ramban. Go back to Pesukim and check. This is the only item that gets a Hey Ayidia the very first time it appears. How does that make any sense? You haven't told me about it yet. What do I mean? The Urim, the Tumim, the ones that I already know about. Why is there a definite article? Why is there the Hey? We call it in grammar the Hey Ayidia, the term that he uses here. It's the known one, the one that you know about. I don't know about it. What? No, we have to take a look. Maybe it is. He has a different kasha. He says, well, es ha-mishkan ta'aseh, and then when you talk about the structure of the mishkan, that comes in the Hebrew from the get-go. He says, careful, that's actually the second time it appears. Where it appeared before? By Moshe Kriyas Giro. Asuli mikdash. The shachati be socha. We mentioned the Mishkan. By the way, this is also Rabban Lashita. So, yeah, it's also Rabban Lashita. So, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. Because the Rambam, both in the Sefer HaMitzvahs and in Hilchos Beis Bechira, understands that the mitzvah of Asuli Mikdash includes not only the structure, the walls and the roof, but also the Klei HaMikdash. Rambam says we're not going to count making the menorah, making the shulchan, the asis menorah, the haftar, the asis shulchan, and so on and so forth. Those aren't separate mitzvahs. Those are all part of the mitzvah of the Asuli Mikdash Shulchan Tibes Hofen. That's he writes the mitzvah Chaf, mitzvah Sechaf, and Sefer HaMitzvahs. And then we open up the Hilchos Beis Bechira. That's what he says. The mitzvah Asuli Mikdash, and he says you have to make certain rooms and certain walls, and you have to make certain kelim. Very clear, very consistent. Ramban, in the Hasagas, Ramban did not write Hasagas on the Rambam, on the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, but he did write Hasagas on Rambam's Sefer HaMitzvahs, and he doesn't write it on Mitzvah Chav, the Mitzvah of Asuli Mikdash. He writes the Mitzvah Lamed Gimel, I believe, which is the Mitzvah of Vigdei Kuna. There he attacks the Rambam and broadens the attack. He says, by the way, what he wrote earlier in Mitzvah Chav, that Asuli Mikdash is both the structure and the kelim, I think is absolutely incorrect. No, Asuli Mikdash just means making the structure. Why don't you count making the kelim separately? And he says, there's no mitzvah to make a shulchan. There's no mitzvah to make a menorah at all. It's a hechsher mitzvah. You want to have lacha apad, you got to have a shulchan. You want to have a menorah, you want to have lacha as a menorah, you got to have a menorah. Rabban says, I agree that we don't count them separately, but not because they're subsumed under the greater mitzvah, so mikdash, but because they're half shemitzvah. And he tells you, Aaron, therefore, is the odd man out, according to Rabban. Maybe you should count the Aaron because there's no ma'isa mitzvah that you do with the Aaron. Every other kelim mikdash has a function. Aaron is just there to hold the luchas. Okay, a discussion for a different time. But I would suggest, there's a lot to say about that, the Rabban has a lot to say about that, but coming back, at the core, there is a machlokas Rambam Ramban. This is without even a chronish diyudim. It's clearly a machlokas Rambam Ramban. The asli mikdash, according to Rambam, that means a furnished Pesach mikdash structure and kelim. According to Ramban, the asli mikdash only means the structure, not the kelim. You'll notice Ramban just assumed the shitasa. He said, "Oh, the actual structure." HaMishkan, that was already referenced earlier by the Asuli Mikdash. She's assuming the Asuli Mikdash L'shitasa is only the structure. Oh, Rabban L'shitasa now is working his way through. So he says, I think Ibn Ezra is very difficult. Again, you could push back from HaMishkan, maybe from the Eifon. That's taking up inside. So what talk is going on with the Urim HaTumim? He says, the Urim HaTumim, it says, Nasatel Chosh HaMishpat, our Pasuk. You haven't previously told me how to make them, and yet it's kira kaspei idea. It's with the letter hey, the, and as you say now, you recast what he said before. Only Moshe is told about it. So if you look in Pekudei, the Urim HaTumim do appear once more, but only at the last step. The seventh last step is of human involvement in Pekudei is the Jews making all the pieces and presenting them to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what Rashi says. He gives the bracha. Rashi says that bracha was Behinoam. Some other time, maybe on a Shabbos, sing that nigger. Then the last step of human involvement, before the Ashras Hashkina, at the very, very end of Pekudei, the last step of human involvement, Moshe Rabbeinu takes all the parts and puts them together into a whole Zishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu takes all of the Gadim, puts them together and invests Aaron and his sons with the big day Kahuna. So it's only at that last step where Moshe takes over that the Urim HaTumim appear once again, Rambam points out. They appear at the very beginning, when in Parsha Tetzav, and Akadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu the plan, then they disappear. The Jews are never told about them, the Jews never make them. But when Moshe Rabbeinu gets all the parts, all of a sudden he has Urim HaTumim that he sticks into the Choshen. The mystery of the missing Urim HaTumim, where'd they go? So that's why he says, you're on the top of page 5 in Dallas, number 90. Lo yamayzu umim. It wasn't craft work. The craftsmen didn't make it. They didn't do anything to make it. The Jewish people as a whole didn't donate for it. Avraham sold Mastur Lamosha via Gura, who kiss Avan Dikrisha. Avan says, let me take Rashi a step further. Rashi tells me it was a Ksav Shem of Horish placed inside the fold of the pocket of the Choshen. He says, well, you also notice that they disappear and then they reappear. You only see them in conjunction with, we only hear about them in conjunction with Moshe Rabbeinu. It has that hey idea from the outset, the Urim v'Tumim. From the get-go, Moshe Rabbeinu knows about it. Yeah, because exactly. The bottom of the gear says, oh, how you might say, either Moshe Rabbeinu wrote them the Kedusha based on whatever Kabbalistic secrets HaKadosh Baruch Hu had taught him, or it came down from Shammai, the Kafkias Kirim Stam would be a deal. That's why he just started talking about them right away with the A idea. Like when Yashkeni comes to Kedim Legan Eden as HaKiruvim. Another item that appears for the first time in Chumash right away with the A idea. The Kruvim are outside of Gan Eden. After Adam and Chava are kicked out. The Kruvim? Did we meet them before? Which Kruvim? The answer is, well, if it's something that being provided, something spiritual provided by Kadosh Baruch Hu, then they get a hey idea from the outset. The Kruvim. Here they are. Kadosh Baruch Hu put the Kruvim there. So the same thing. The Urim and the Tumim, either Moshe had already instructed to make them, and only he was involved in that, or it just came down from Shammai. And then he said, then he goes on to explain, how it worked. Moshe took lachach ksavu urim v'tumim and put them in the choshen mishpat. Achrei shehilbish es Aaron ha'epad v'choshen. Aaron's already wearing all the begadim, and then he says, you look at the pesukim and carefully. First, by yitein es ha'epad v'yachos b'cheish ha'epad. First, he dresses in the epad. He also malaf es ha'choshen, and then he puts the urim v'tumim into the choshen. Now he begins to explain a little bit, skipping a line or two. Va'inu ki ayu shemus kedoshim. Mikocham ya'iru ha'osios mi'avnei ha'choshen. El Ene HaKohen HaShoeb LeMishpatam. The Kabbalistic power of the Shemos was such, and when the Kohen would ask a Shaila, the Urim V'Tumim, so particular letters on the Choshen, they were engraved on the Choshen, would light up, and he begins to give examples. And he says something interesting. One of the examples in the Tanakh, they ask the Choshen about going to war, say for beginning of Sefer Shoftim, I believe, and then this is which Shevet should go first, and the response is Yehuda Ya'ale. Yehuda, Shevet Yehuda should be in the vanguard. So what did that look like, he says? Kashi Yamasha, example. Kashi Sholom, Mi Ya'alon Ma'atanani B'tchil Ilachim. Who's going to be in the vanguard in the front of the Jewish army? Fight against the Kananim. Ayakohen Mechavein Deshem Oshehem Urim. Because now the Ramban, by the way, is bothered by one more question. Urim and Tumim. What are Urim and what are Tumim? Then you say like even Ezra, there were different objects. I don't know. So some of those fancy gold survivors are called Urim, and other ones are called Tumim. Okay. But if no, it was just a piece of parchment with Shem Hashem on it. So what are Urim and what are Tumim? What two things are there and why are they called that? Rabban says, Urim has to do with the fact that it would cause the letters on the Choshen to light up. Okay. So they're asking the question, Mi Yala Lanu? And he looks at the Kohen, looks at the Choshen. The Heiru Le'enav, he would think about, and he also had to focus on those Shemos, which are called Urim. The Heiru Le'enav, Osios Yehuda. Okay. And the response is Yehuda Yala. So maybe it's also one Yud from Levi, and Ayin from Shimon. A Lamed from Levi, Ehe from Avram, Hakasim Shamal Dash Rebbe Seinu. Tell you footnote 97 where that is, the Gemara in Yuma, that Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov's names also were engraved on the Choshen. You have all the letters. Or maybe Heira Pamacher is like an Ein of Hey Yehuda. Now, how'd you have that extra? Where is that extra, that third Hey coming from? So maybe one of them flashed, went on and off. So that counts as nothing. And then he says, what's missing? I see Yehuda and an Ayin over here and a Yud over there and a Yud and Levi and an Ayin and Shimon. What does that mean? He didn't know how to organize them. Min ha'osin shesidru mehen Yehudi aleh. And the havla alfei abdalos that there's been a word game to look like this. So how many different words can you make out of a collection of letters? So this wasn't the game. The havla alfei abdalos. This was profound avos Hashem. But it's the same fundamental struggle. There are a lot of ways to organize these letters, and the Ramban gives a couple of examples. Interesting. You see, just to hear Ramban talking about this, he said, "I actually asas mehem." He could have said, "Make hoy hey aliyah." Or hey al Yehuda, other ways of organizing those nine letters into words. The Tevus Achias Rabbis Miller. Rambam says you could probably think of a lot of other permutations of those nine letters into words. So how do they come and God will interpret? It was a second set of Shemos of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, who also inscribed on that piece of parchment, which are called Tumim. Tumim means complete, perfected. Mikolchem yiyeh leva kohen tamim v'yiyas inyan ha'osios she'ir le'enav. So first he would focus on some set of Kabbalistic shemos called Urim, and he would notice that certain letters were glowing. And as Ravan said, sometimes maybe they're even flashing. And then he would focus on the second set of shemos. Presumably both sets of shemos are written on that cloth. When he would, with his mind, focus on the shemos as well, and then he would sort of lock into that. And after having gone to the Urim stage, where he sees the letters, he'd gone to the Tumim stage, where he would see how to organize them. Yeah.
How does the story of Chana work
out? That's a good question. That is a good question. So let's take a look. Let's keep going. How does any of this work? Kasher kibim b'shemas Urim, ve'iru, he focused on the Urim names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the letters would light up. Chozer miyad b'chag b'shemas HaTumim, and we'd switch immediately to focus on the different set of shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Oh, then always shows me ears the enough while the letters are still glowing. If you have a believer, then he would understand shechiburam Yehudi Yala. The proper way, the correct way to organize those letters is, in this case, Yehudi Yala. What is all of this? The zos madrega madrega shuach hakodesh. Ramban says you should know, just to put this into a larger framework. Global categories, this is a type of Ruach HaKodesh, which, by the way, what's Ruach HaKodesh? L'mata min ha-Nevua u'l'mala mi-Paskal she'nishtamishim ba-yishen yu'achar she'paska ha-Nevua u'paskal u'metubim k'moshiz ki-Rabbo Seim. Fascinating. He's giving sort of like just a little bit of insight. There's a sliding scale of different degrees of human being connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and receiving communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The highest level is Nevua. The Rambam writes in the Mohr, I believe that even within Nevuah there are many, many different levels. We know the Iker and Amunah that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah is fundamentally higher than any other Navi. I think I mentioned in the past that the Gemara tells us that, let's say, Yeshaya was within the non-Moshe Nevi'im, Yeshaya was a higher level Navi than Yechezkel. Gemara says that's why the Yeshaya describes the Merkava less than Yechezkel does, because it wasn't so overwhelming for him. And presumably, you know, we count the lamech, that there were many, many different levels and gradations of the book. And then Rabban says, below that is Ruach HaKodesh. And this is an example of Ruach HaKodesh. It doesn't have to be a Navi in order to work the Urim Tumim. This is sort of like a level below. You have the range in the Bua, and then the level below is Ruach HaKodesh. And he says, by the way, let me explain a bunch of Gemaras to you. There's a level below Ruach HaKodesh that's called Baskol. Baskol. Basco literally means the daughter of a sound. It's like sounds like it's a step down. Not the mother's sound, it's the daughter's sound. It's a step that Basco implies. This is sort of a step down from a higher level. He says, yeah. Basco, after Ramban is starting to put a lot of pieces together. He says, Basco, you find reference in the Bayesheni period. Basco, even, you have the Basco about, for instance, about Grisha Pasan like Basil. The Baskol, even after Churban Bayis Sheni, in the days of Rabbi Eliezer, right? The famous story, the tragic story about Metzia. Rabbi Eliezer has that machlokes, Rabbi Tarun Shachnai, and Rabbi Eliezer refuses that they debate, they vote, and Rabbi Eliezer refuses to accept the majority opinion. Remember that whole story? He calls forth all sorts of nisim. If Halach is like me, and the walls should bend over, and the water should flow backwards, and the trees should move, and they all happen. And the Chachamim say, we don't care. And then Rabbi Eliezer says, if Allah is like me, they should be even more direct, simon min hashamayim, And suddenly Basel comes out and says, Allah Ibles Bukhamak. The Gemara says a dramatic end to that chapter of the story. Amr Shua Radla, Shua gets up and says, I don't care. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to ignore that Baskal. We're not supposed to paskin. Post Moshe Rabbeinu, we're not supposed to paskin based on Nevuah. So, this is a Nisayon. And I'm going to fail the Nisayon. I will be violating Ratzon Hashem if I paskin based on a Baskal. If I held like a blazer, I held like a blazer. If my analysis of the sugya, the Chochma, was not like a blazer, then to change my psak based on a Baskal would be a violation of the Din Dorais, a violation of Ratzon Hashem. Amishor Raglav, Zlo Bashamayim, but that's a Baskal. As about the even Acher Korban Bais, that's already in the Dor of Yavne. That's Rabbi Lez, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Kiva, and so forth. So that's what the Rabbi now gave a such perspective. He says there was Nevuah. Nevuah ended at the beginning of the Bayis Sheni period. Chagat Zachar Malachi at the beginning of the Bayis Sheni period. And Mishameh So Chagat Zachar Malachi back from Nevuah. It's the end of Nevuah, the very, very beginning. When Zachim says, Kadosh Baruch Hu really would have ended even earlier, and he gives them three more Nevi'im to enable and smooth the process of returning to Eretz Yisrael and building the second base of Mikdash. That's the end of Nevuah. What was the end of the Urim V'Tumim? Gemara Yuma says there were many things that were missing in the second base of Mikdash they had in the first base of Mikdash. It worked, halachically it worked, and all the necessary parts to be a Beis HaMikdash, but in terms of the spiritual qualities that Kadosh Baruch was gracing with, there was a lot missing. Most notably, the luchos were not visible. The Aron, the Gemara's Machlokas, and Yuma, whether Aron went, had traveled vertically or horizontally. Horizontally means that when Nebuchadnezzar came and sacked the first Beis HaMikdash, he carried off the Aron. Somewhere, Aron fell with Babel. We assume, the Rambam says, no. It didn't travel horizontally. The Babel traveled vertically down into the basement several generations earlier. And the last free king of the Jewish people, Yoshua HaMelech, understood that things were going south, and it was time now to activate the feature, the way the Rambam describes very dramatically. When Yoshua HaMelech originally built his first place on Mikdash, he included a subterranean chamber that could be used in case of emergency. Yoshio, his great-great-great-great-grandson, says, now it's time to activate that. They take the Aron, they hit it in the basement, as the Gemara says, Aron b'mekom u'nignaz, it was hidden on site. When the Nebuchadnezzar came, a couple of generations later, there was no Aron to find. And the Aron is on site, but below ground, arayam azeh. A lot to say about that as well, not for now. But one of the other things, so one of the things they definitely didn't have, the Mishnah says in Yuma, in the second base of Nish, Kongo would come in on Yom Kippur, there was no Aron, it was just the Eben Shaziah. Where the Aron went is a machlokes. But that the Aron wasn't on location, that's a holiday, that they knew. And there were other things the Gemara Yuma says that were also missing. One of the other things that was missing was not as much as Shas Hashchina, there were particular items that were missing. One of the items that was missing was the Urim V'Tumim. Rambam said, yeah. All hangs together. Nevuah disappeared at that point, and so did the Urim V'Tumim. They're picking up number two. And he says it's Lamatamim, this Ruach Kosh is below Nevuah, it's above the Baskal. Baskal they had in the Bayis Sheni, even Acher Shepaskal Nevuah, Upaskur Urim V'Tumim, Kemoshes Kira Mesin. In the course of the Bayis Sheni, they didn't have Nevuah, except the very beginning. They didn't have Urim V'Tumim, but they still had Baskal. That was an even lower level. And then he floats one last fascinating suggestion that can explain some mysterious psukim in Nevi'im. And with this we wrap up. This Rabban is full of fascinating mysteries, intriguing mysteries, and intriguing explanation, putting things into perspective, putting things into larger categories. It says, Efshar, Asher Shacharei Shenosan Moshe from footnote 2, 5 lines from the bottom page, top end up. Maybe after Moshe put the Shemas HaKadosh and the Urim V'Tumim into the Choshen, perhaps, he's not sure, but perhaps, Hayu no da'im b'masores b'menu l'gidol le'chachem Yisrael. Interesting question. Did anyone, Moshe Rabbeinu perhaps had written the Urim V'Tumim, or else he had gotten it in the Shemayim, he saw it, and put it in the Choshen. Did anyone else know these Shemas? He's Urim and Tumim. Interesting question. Moshe did them. Did anyone else know that? He says, well, Moshe Rabbeinu passed on the Torah to Klal Yisrael. He passed on the Kabbalistic part of the Torah to select members of Klal Yisrael, to Gedolei Chachmei Yisrael. Was this a part of it? Could be. Maybe this is part of the Masoras that he handed to Gedolei Chachmei Yisrael, Shibasarim Lehem in the Sisrei Torah, that he gave to them the rest of the secrets of the Torah. But why, what prompts him to say this? He says, because you find interesting references to the Ephod. The figure Chaya B'yad David Ephod. V'haya Kedimus Ephod Moshe. Ubo Choshen Kedimus Choshen HaKodesh. Interesting. You know, he doesn't refer to Choshen Mishpat, refers to the Choshen HaKodesh, because the focus is on the Kedusha that's within it. He's looking at Sefer Shmuel, the bottom where I look, for Al Perichav Gimel. David, where it has an Ephod Bad. What's with this Ephod in the Choshen? He says, I wonder whether it had a room of tomb also. David HaMelech was part of the Rambam, with the Rambam list of 40 links in the chain from Moshe Rabbeinu learning Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the way down through Ravina Rashi at the end of the time of Chassidus HaTalmud. Ravina Rashi spoke for Ra, as the Gemara says. The Rambam points that list of 40 chain, that list of 40 links in the chain. So one of those is David HaMelech. David HaMelech was not only Melech Yisrael, the composer of Tehillim, and a Navi, and a military leader. He was all that. He was also one of Gedolei Chachmei Yisrael. He was one of the Baalei HaMesorot. David HaMelech would definitely be privy to those Sotos HaKabbalah. Okay? So maybe when he made an Ephod, made a Choshen, maybe he also made an Urim V'Thummim. He knew those names. Maybe he wrote them a Klaf as well. Fascinating. And that's what made a fuller Choshen. But then, on the other hand, Avonir Shayabad, it may have been only linens. It may not have been so similar. It's like in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. Nar Chagur Ephod Bad. Young Yeshiva Bachar is wearing a purely linen Ephod. So maybe that's what David asked. That's where I'm bothering to raise a fascinating question.
Sure.
Huh?
White shirt.
Maybe. Interesting man. Interesting man. Interesting man. So you're saying the Rebbe wears colorful, but the Yeshiva Bacher wear white. Interesting sushta. Yeah, be that as it may, Ramban is very delicately raising to come back from the firm Torah and treat it though it is the actual Torah. Ramban is raising, there is that intriguing reference, deep in Sefer Shmuel, David having an Ephod and a Choshen. You wonder, was that mamash, like Kehilah B'Dekuna, to the extent that maybe had Urim U'Tumim? Which already awakens Ramban to wonder. Maybe David HaMelech knew the Urim U'Tumim. Maybe they said, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu didn't hold on to that knowledge himself, maybe he passed it on as part of the Masorah of Kabbalah. Or maybe not. He says, look, you find other references to an Ephod, which was not anything like the Kohen Gadol, it may purely have Bad. As you find that, begin to say for Shmuel, you find that later by No, Irako Anim, Shmonim, Bechamisha Ish, No Sei Ephod Bad. So we're not sure how similar it was. Perhaps they would use this to, even if they didn't have the full Bikkei Kohen Gadol, a Kohen would wear this mock Ephod, mock Choshen, and maybe it would sometimes work. Interesting. Even Ezra already raises this possibility, but maybe there were other Ephodim that non-Kohan Gadol wore, and maybe they could also work. How would they work? Well, even Ezra had held that the Urim U'Tumim were some sort of gold and silver implements. Ramban already rejected that, and he's continuing to reject that. They say, what angle would even Ezra said I'm open to? That maybe Taka, they had alternative Ephodim when there was no Kohan Gadol. If the Choshen, if the Urim U'Tumim is Shem Hashem written on parchment, maybe David HaMelech do those Shemos. Shmuel knew those Shemos that they could produce more. Just like we have more than one mezuzah extant in the world, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of mezuzahs in the world. We know that the Sofer knows what to write, and he writes it. So, there weren't millions or thousands, but there may have been two or three or four, or maybe 180 or 85. There may have been a handful of copies of Urim and Tumim that had been written by Dibn Chacham Yisrael that had this Masorah. But then he closes by saying that Ibn Ezra attacks the idea of the Ksav Shem HaForsh because he found the Tshuva of Haigov who said Shem HaForsh can't be used for predicting the future. He says, oh, if Rashi would have seen the Tshuva of Haigov, he never would have said it. Rabban says, I did see it. I saw the Tshuva of Haigov, I thought about it. He says, Yodanu Kidas Rabbi Avraham Lonus Kabnela. And I know, I read the Tshuva too, and I'm convinced that the Ibn Ezra missed the point that Haigov was trying to make. So, to wrap up, a very, very rich, very multidimensional Ramban, beginning with the question of how you define the term Urim V'Tumim, and then he's using tools of Parshanut, of careful, very careful, sensitive reading of the psukim, noticing the idea, noticing where items appear and where they don't appear, and as we saw, bringing to bear various perhaps as we suggested, various external sheets of Ramban, both his approach to what it means in Niskasha, Moshe, and Maisa Menorah, maybe that's informing how he's saying you could have said Kasha Hera by the Urim Tum as well, and Ramban's Sheet in Halacha and Parshanut, the Varsisa, the Asuli Mikdash, only refers to the structure after the Kalim, and therefore that's the terrace that we saw to why HaMishkan, the idea, because that specifically had been referred to earlier by the Lushitas of Asuli Mikdash. And we saw the way he explained Urim and Tumim, two different sets of Shemus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with two different functions, to make the letter light up and then to be misar them, to misar them properly. He had a fascinating take that he had about Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh and Baskol and this remarkable notion that maybe there were multiple Urim V'Tumim Klafim if this was part of the Masorah of Kabbalah that had been handed from Moshe Rabbeinu down the line of the Gedolei Chachmei Yisrael, which would have included the Shmuel and David and others. Okay, Yeshpeth. A fascinating insight. I said before, for aspects of the Tzav that are very halacha l'maisa, this is, at the moment, incredibly abstruse and obscure, incredibly fascinating. Meheri Bar Meis HaMish, which was Zohar very soon, to the Takasi Yipan Gadol, wearing an ephod and a choshen with whatever the Rumutum was supposed to be, properly placed inside, to go back to the fullness of Mikdash in the best possible way.